Sorry about being late.
Boom! It happens. We're live.
We're live. Hey, folks. Live. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today, we are privileged to have sci-fi writer Scott Moon with us. How you doing, Scott?
Good, good. Happy to be here.
And some of you might know Scott. You're also a big deal over at the Keystroke Medium Facebook group.
I take up a lot of space and breathe a lot of valuable air over there.
And we also enjoy watching the copious amounts of meltdowns from computer issues.
Oh yeah, I'm the. If there was an expert in computer meltdowns, that would be me. But just on the initiation phase, more like a fuse than a solution.
Well, someone has to have the problem so that somebody can solve the problems.
Yeah, right. Performing a service here.
That's what Mike does on his side. He fixes the problems.
Awesome. It's job security for me. Chaos keeps me employed.
I should use that line. That's fantastic.
You can have that one for free, Walt. It's okay.
Like a T-shirt or something, or a bumper sticker.
There you go.
That'd be something nice to see on like a tow truck.
Oh my God.
Probably not so much on ER doctor scrubs, but you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine you walk into like an ER and you have like, you know, the NASCAR like jacket set up on a set of scrubs. Like, you know,
different. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This guy's sponsored by Tylenol and Bayer aspirin.
I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to be prescribing there, Doc. So anyway, we're starting a little bit late today, and I apologize. I got to do a thing with my kid, but I just want to set you guys up. Scott has got a great new series running right now, Invasion Day, and Walt and Scott are going to talk all about that while I vaminose this way. So, Scott, good to meet you. I'll leave you in Walt's capable hands. I didn't mean that to sound dirty, and I'll catch you guys later.
Yeah, but we kind of like that. It's fun that way.
That's why we do this online. You know, it just gets weird.
On that happy note, I'll see you guys later.
Cheers. So, Scott, can you talk about a little bit about how Invasion Day came out? I mean, came to be, because you know, normally when we've been talking to writers lately, it's like pew pew, and the ship goes zoom, and then you know you got the other side where it's like. Where it's like he swung the sword and blah blah blah, but these are more like everyman characters. Can you talk about how that started up?
Yeah, I mean, so basically, it started out. I was reading some alien invasion stuff, and that had recently kind of hit pretty big. My friend Nathan Heisen had a series that just blew up like crazy, and I was reading it, and I was thinking, you know, I was thinking of all the movies and different things I really love that alien invasion theme, and. I was at work, and so I couldn't really write on the project I was working on, but I had Dragon Anywhere, which is a phone app. And so whenever I would stop or whatever in my car, I would just pull it up, and I would be like, open bracket, aliens swarm down from the skies, close bracket, and then move on to the next point. And so I plotted out this whole book, just basically this real fast-paced kind of romping adventure with some sci-fi, but some current stuff. And the characters came pretty quick. So the main character, David, and this hitchhiker named Dust, who's from a planet called Dustvaria, you know, spoiler, but they kind of came first, and I just started having a lot of fun with it. And I would work on it on and off, you know, for a couple of years as I was doing other things. Just a good time. It's just one of those good time books.
The thing I really liked about David was that he was really the everyman. Like yeah. he had some serious problems. He was just trying to dig himself out. You know, he had got himself just a little bit comfortable, but not too comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and I really liked the fact that there were times in especially the beginning of the book where his past was really haunting him for certain things.
Right.
You know, I don't want to gush.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that was actually super challenging, because in my outline, I made him a felon for different, I don't know why that's what came out in the, cause you know, like a lot of people, we always talk about, doing outlining, but outlining is still kind of discovery writing in its own sense. So I was flowing through this outline. It was coming really quick, and it had in there that he had this dangerous felonious past, but I didn't know what it was. And so I'm like, how do I make him a guy who's done some serious time in prison without making him like, you know, a character not everybody can empathize with? And what eventually came out of it is he was a street racer and just kind of a wild child, the oldest of three, which if you're into the birth order stuff, that might not be the right personality traits. But But he's just kind of a wild, reckless, free spirit, but also wants to help everybody. Never saw a lost cause. He doesn't want to reach his hand out to. And, you know, some things went horribly wrong in his past, but not because he's a cruel or evil person, just because he's just a little bit too on fire for his own good sometimes. A little bit of a temper and as well. And so he stayed the everyman, you know, in the truest sense, but he also had – you can also see that he's not really somebody you want to mess with.
You know, the thing I really liked about David was that, like I said, I know I'm having like a tendency to compare him to other characters, because it was refreshing to have a character with a different set of life experiences. I mean, if you see a lot of what's in fiction today, they're either the bad boy that went like the special forces route, so they got all these skills, or they have some insight or special power. But it really wasn't that with David. It was like really his past experiences that kind of made him who he is and what he was capable of doing. And it was really a nice breath of fresh air to have a character like that. But then you get Dust thrown into the mix, and it's just like, oh crap.
Yeah. And she's super, super interesting. With David, like you're saying, a lot of the stuff that he can do kind of comes from situations he was thrown into, but also because he's that guy that talks to everybody and is on the road, and he claims to be a loner, but yet, you know, he stops at a truck stop. He, you know, if he talks to a farmer, he listens to the farmer. He's not somebody who like dominates the conversation. So he learns a lot of stuff. He picks up a lot of things that he wouldn't know if he didn't just really enjoy people. But then Dust, so she's obviously a mystery, and she was the same way. It's like, I know something's up with her, but I don't know what. And it took me a long time to kind of work out what her deal was.
So. Yeah, you kind of get a sense of things like really odd in like the first third of the book, but then there's so much good characters that come into that. You just kind of start seeing her as like a normal everyday, you know, hey, I was just on the road when this all happened. And then toward the end of the book, once again, the first book, you're just like, oh, wait a minute. That's kind of cool. What kind of brought this, like this type of story, into the book? Because I mean, you could have gone a bunch of different ways with this. And the great thing about the book is that it has really great characterization without sacrificing action. They work together very, very well. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Yeah. So I did the outline. I'd been writing the Last Reaper series with Jay and Chaney, and that is in first person point of view. So it's always from one character. And, you know, I had spent a lot of time in my writing in third person where you can have multiple. So when I was doing this on the side, I was really wanting to go back to kind of my roots and do a couple of different points of view. Usually you can't do too many, you know, especially in like the first book. I think three is probably just enough. You get into a longer series, maybe you can expand a little bit because people start wanting to see, they have a favorite side character they want to see do something, which is definitely the case as I'm writing book three. But so the process of kind of keeping that action is why would these people be connected in this story? Because it's three different viewpoints of this alien invasion. So, well, if they were family, they would be trying to contact each other after it all goes to hell. So I came up with, and I wanted them to be different. So David's a truck driver with a rough past. His sister's a cop in Chicago, who's his younger sister, second oldest. And she like idolized him, but also kind of like is annoyed that he's such a loser sometimes at the same time. So she's a cop in Chicago when everything hits. But then the youngest brother is kind of the odd man out in their group because they're both kind of rough characters. They're kind of like kind of fearless, kind of get themselves bite off more than they can chew. But then the youngest brother, he needed to be heroic, but I didn't want to have him be a brawler, kind of like they are in their own ways. And so I made him the smart one of the family. And he's a program designer, and he works for a company called Warfighter Games. And I didn't know where this is going, but it's really coming to fruition in the third book. So he designed these games, and his game that he designed is called The Red Massacre. And the deal was that the game is so hard that everybody wanted him to keep dumbing it down. But some people in this company were like, you need to make this harder, make it harder, make it more real, make it tough. And so the fans of the game love it, but it's almost impossible to win. And one of the characteristics of the game is there's no respawn. and they have that. It's the one asterisk theme that, you know, that a lot of military and law enforcement people will have the one asterisk on their gear. But so there's a reason for that, as it turns out. And very early in the game, you realize that the Warfighter Games is a little bit more prepared for this than would seem reasonable, because they have a bunker, you know, and stuff like that. So that has some interesting plot threads.
I really need a bunker.
Bunkers are pretty cool. we have in Kansas, we used to have a lot of silos and stuff, you know, nuclear weapon silos. Well, a lot of those are closed down. And there was a guy who lived up north of us near Salina, where some of those book starts. And he had bought one of those bunkers and prepped it.
Oh, wow.
He had all the good stuff. And he eventually passed away, and he donated two of his, I think they're called like Bulldog armor cars or something like mm-hmm. that, to the SWAT team. And they refurbished them, and they're using them now.
Oh, my God.
And they're super cool. You don't usually get that dropped in your lap, because they ain't cheap.
No, definitely not. But yeah, the juxtaposition between like somebody who's just, you know, rough and tumble, both of the Osages who are in those lines of work, you know, one the cop and one the criminal. And then you have Charles, right?
Yeah, Charles is the youngest brother.
Yeah. You know, and he's just, you know, just trying to keep his head above water, because he's realizing how deep he stepped in it.
and it
was definitely a pretty cool twist too, because you know, you have two people basically working the both sides of a problem, and then you have this guy in the middle who's trying to figure out not the problem, but just how to keep his family from suffering from it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was definitely pretty cool. Can you talk about the? Because obviously, you know, if it's Invasion Day, and you know, based on your cover, which that cover is sweet.
Yeah, I got hooked. Variant Publications hooked me up with that, so they got a connection somewhere with some artists that are good.
So, you know, based on that cover, can you talk about the aliens a little bit? Because, like, when you're talking invasion stories, you know, lately a lot of people have been, hey, this is, you know, there's no reason aliens would come here for resources, because, you know, they're all throughout space, or there's no reason that they would come here to do this because it's all out there. But you had a pretty unique take on these aliens. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So that's when you write in this genre, that's obviously one of the things. It's just like the other ones. As I started to outline it, I'm like, yeah, but why are they here? Because the initial part, like from earlier in our conversation, is I drive a lot, you know, being in this part of the country. So I drive a lot in on I-70 towards the mountains. And there's a lot of really impressive scenery there, because growing up here, I'm like, well, we don't have any trees. We don't have any oceans. We don't have any mountains in Kansas. This is a boring place. But if you drive it much, you realize this is an amazing, amazing vistas and stuff to look at. And so I had the first scene where he picks up Dust Varia and they start to see the invasion is very visual to me. And it was a big part of the motivating of the story. But so I got going, because I tend to outline and then I start to discovery ride. It gets all mixed up. But I still hadn't 100% worked out why they were here. And then it just came kind of easy. It's like, well, they'd obviously need resources. You know, maybe it's a waypoint on wherever they're going to. But they've been in space, I decided, for thousands of years, because they have a mixture of fast space travel and slow space travel. The most realistic space travel is basically generation ships, given that depends on how deep we believe in Einstein or the Alcubierre tunnels or whatnot, or which one you want to choose. But so they've been in space for a long time, and they've developed a lot of physical needs, and they're very deplenished and nutrient deprived, and as well as cultural and emotional things. And they believe, the aliens believe, in something called the blood power of a planet. So anytime they come to a habitable world, they believe it has this blood power, and it may or may not be true. I don't want to get too difficult and too deep into the weeds of explaining exactly what that is to them, but they and they're from all different species. So some of them drink blood probably as they evolve. That's one of the things they do. And so they've come here and they want to have a good source of blood. So they're going to basically make livestock out of humans, but they also make livestock out of, you know, that like the aliens show up and they're like, holy crap, look at all these feedlots. I think we should take those over and we could feed on these cows. But it depends on your class amongst the aliens to whether you feed on, you know, the lowest level of rodents up to, you know, human alien space slaves and stuff. So
yeah, talking about the like the class or the cast of who gets to eat what, some of the scenes in the book where they're talking about, you know, people who have, you know, kind of started to evolve toward this and what they have to eat and how they have to do it was very, very telling, especially with events that are going on right now. You know, it was just like,
you know, something that's pretty grim, you know, because they also obviously want their little human vassals and stuff. And so they can kind of be drawn into this biosphere, for lack of a better term. And they don't usually survive, but sometimes they do. And there's some places that we go with that part of the story. But
the thing that,
interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The thing that I really enjoyed was in some of the conversations between some of the characters and the aliens. You have David, who's pretty much the central character of this, and you see a lot of this through his viewpoint. You know, he's driving his life now is he drives a truck. He drives a rig cross country. And it, you know, from listening to the aliens talk, it's like, listen, do what we say and you'll get through this mostly unscathed. Basically, your planet's a truck stop.
You're a trucker. We're coming to a truck stop. We should be friends.
Well, we're just here. Yeah. We're just here for the, you know, the blood infused coffee and a little bit of beef jerky. And then we're on our way. So just, just grin and bear it.
Yeah. Maybe they'll grab an audio book and a stuffed animal for the kids in their alien home world, you know?
Exactly. Oh my God. So, you've already have a couple of books on this, already out on Amazon and Amazon Kindle. So we have the second book, which once again the covers on this are just killer. Can you talk about where it goes in the second book?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I love covers. Another part of the development of this story is I made a book cover using a bunch of stock art, which I thought was pretty good at the time because I like to have it. So I made book covers for all of them, and then later I contracted an artist named Lacarto, who I met on 99 Designs and got book covers from him, and they were really good. I like those too. And then when I was talking to Jeff Chaney, he said, well, if you're going to go forward with this, because this is my solo work, but he's supportive of it, he said, if you're going to do that, you really need some grade A covers. So let me see if I can hook you up. So we get this cover and I write a brief for the covers. I wrote a brief for the first cover. It turned out at least as good, if not better than what I had imagined. This one the same way. And I told him, I said, well, I want him fighting an alien, you know, all this action, gave him all the little story beat details. And I said, you know, he's either going to have a gun or an axe, like a fireman's axe. So that's the axe that he comes up with. And I'm like, that axe is so cool that then that informed my outlining as it developed throughout the story. So now that axe plays a much bigger role in the next two books than it maybe would have originally, just because I get a lot of inspiration from cover. They did the same thing with the last Reaper series. There's several elements in that come from me looking at the cover and going, oh yeah, that's going to have to be in the book more than it was. But yeah, so basically Resistance Day, the first one is Invasion Day. Earth gets their asses handed to them. The second day, they're trying to fight back, but you know, things aren't going well. They're still kind of rocked back on their heels. They're trying to figure out what the aliens do, how they fight, who they are, if they're all the same alien race or not. You know, if they can steal some of their technology, like axes and pieces of armor and
constantly, like axes, yes.
Like axes. Like, you know what we really need from an alien is an axe, you know. But you know, it's a pretty basic tool. No alien invader would be without some basic survival tools, and that one is legit. So
hell yeah. Yeah, I love the alien in the back. He just, you know, there's so many things in this cover that it doesn't compete with anything. It just kind of, you know, tells the story without drawing your eye away from too much. So yeah, this is pretty, I love this cover. This is amazing.
And so, you know, I've had a couple of my fans compared to like space vampires, which, you know, basically that's what we're talking about to a certain extent, but with a different twist, hopefully. But I was like, I don't want them biting with their sharp fangs like Dracula. And so long before I'd seen this cover, one of the characters gets hit by what she calls like a feeder tongue. So when they open their mouths, their tongues are actually the feeding implement, and they shoot out and they, you know, pierce you or whatever. And it's really unpleasant.
It sounds unpleasant.
Some of them, they like to go like for the bone marrow. So like they'll try to bite you in the thigh, and that feeder tongue will jab into your thigh muscle and crack into the bone. Sometimes it'll break. Sometimes it breaks your leg. So another reason why it's hard to survive one of their feeding attacks if they're trying to not kill you completely. And then obviously in this book, things start to go wrong, and they start to realize some of these aliens don't have a lot of self-control. And they're outcasts from their own alien species because they basically will destroy a world. And they've had several worlds, you learn, where they've stopped at where some of their own kind and some of the other alien races just lose control and just swarm the whole planet, you know, like World War Z, and kill everybody and feed it until it's completely ruined and they have to leave because they've wiped everything out, including most of their own fleet. You know,
it's kind of like destroying the bathroom at the truck stop. You just hop back in and hope nobody notices.
Yeah, like I really, there'll be another one someplace down the road.
Oh my God. The thing that is really interesting about these books is that it's not a one party line with the aliens. There are these different factions, and it's interesting to see their reaction to some of the other parties. You know, like, oh, well, that's these guys. And they, you know, hold on a second. We got to deal with this, you know, and they always seem very annoyed when they come upon some of these different factions or people that aren't towing the party line. And it's interesting in like some of the occupied cities in the stories, how the aliens are very, look, do this or bad things will happen. And they don't say necessarily, we're going to do bad things to you. They just say, you know, this is for your own good. Just do this. Yeah. And you find out later, they're not necessarily talking about them like throwing the hammer down. It's there are consequences for not following the rules that are more like an infection than, you know, like retaliation. Yeah. That was pretty damn cool.
Yeah. The rules are there for everybody, you know, and so many things can go wrong. And one of my big pet peeves with science fiction and a lot of action movies in general is that the enemies are too impervious to ever realistically defeat. And so throughout the books, I try to seed in some chinks in their armor where like they absolutely just hand us our backsides here in the beginning because they're so dominant in technology, complete surprise and all that. But they have to have some problems. And I thought internal tension, maybe a near civil war, possibility of a rampant Ravager outbreak among their own kind would all give us a shot. A really small, you know, like, what would they say? So it's like 99% chance we're going to lose, but there is a chance to be able to win.
And that's the other thing, too, is that they're just not, you know, it's just not this one alien race who comes here and kind of, you know, kicks over the trash can at the truck stop and then, you know, makes a mess and leaves. David starts finding other factions. And not just within that race, but like Dust, obviously. And you find a great deal about her, that why she's so important to the story and what the aliens are doing. Not just the aliens, but also our own government. Like, you know, cause they know about her. She was in the first book, she was a pretty pivotal character, and you don't realize her importance till about the like last third of the book. And then you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, definitely. So it's hard sometimes, you know, I get so excited about the characters. I got to keep their storylines true. Cause they get definitely intermingled as we go through into the third book and stuff like that. But I'm at that point in book three where I'm very happy with how the outline's developing and how a lot of these things are tying in and where things that I did in the first book, I didn't really realize were going to come out as well as they are. So all of those things are great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know, I wish I had all the time in the world and I could write like, you know, a whole series from the alien, the Fosca from their vantage point. Cause that could
that'd be great.
It might be a little bit, cause the aliens, they don't get humans at all. And that's part of their problem because, you know, people resisted you know, civilizations have resisted and other times they've come, but never quite like the humans. And not because we're like better or smarter or have better tech or are stronger, just because we're just kind of willful. And it just, we don't, one of the big themes is that they just can't quite figure out why the humans just don't fucking give up. You know, why won't you people quit? We beat you like three times already.
It's like the Captain America thing. I can do this all day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and that's one of the fun things about the book too, especially from Laura's perspective. David's sister.
Yep.
It is Laura, right?
Yeah, Laura.
Yeah. Just want to make sure I got my character straight.
No, you're good.
You know, get my geek, keep my geek cred card for another day. But like from Laura's perspective, you know, she deals with the aliens a lot. And even the, you know, they give her kind of like a personal assistant, like a mm-hmm. digital assistant to kind of help things out. And yeah. she's constantly stumping this thing.
Yeah.
You know, but in a digital age like where we are now, to have something like that where it's like, all right, listen, we're an occupying force. Put this on. This gives you the rules and tell you when you're screwing up. I mean, that's that was a pretty smart move.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna keep track of you. Don't step out of line, because she quickly, you know, she's basically given the devil's bargain. It's like, well, you know, you could go ahead and be resist us, but if you helped us occupy, then maybe it would be more peaceful and less people would suffer. And so she's got a tough choice to make.
You know, and she, as a police officer, she encounters several factions in the police, you know, one mm-hmm. who are trying to follow that line and try and minimize the damage. And right. then you have others who are just like, no, we need to light the candle on this and get things moving.
Yeah, we're going to resist at all costs. And that's that would also be a tough thing. I wonder about that through history. If you were part of something where, you know, things were going bad, you know, either because of a military invasion or problems in your own society, is at what point do you go full-fledged rebel and do that? And the actual, you know, because it sounds really romantic when you read it in a book or look at it in history, when you actually think about what that actually entails, that's not something that you can do lightly, because you better be right.
You know? Yeah, because if you're not only will history judge you, but you could end up on the wrong side of a, you know, of a prison cell, or, you know, even yeah. worse.
Yeah, you wind up realizing it. Oh, nope, actually, all the people I was following are actually just crazy. And the British are actually right. And they still rule America, you know. That was a big deal back. Of course, it's easier back then, because they were pretty far away from their overlords, as mm-hmm. to steal a term from the book. Lord isn't like the term overlord, which is one of what the aliens kind of refer to themselves as when they're addressing humans. And she doesn't even like people to say it. It's like a swear word. Or
yeah. The interactions for some of the different humans that you see in book one, handling their reactions with the aliens, because, and that's the other thing too, is that things like Independence Day, you know, back from the 90s or early 2000s. I can't remember when that came out, but it was
around then. Yeah, I think
yeah, it was a minute ago. The aliens were away. You know, it was like dealing with the IRS. You know, mm-hmm. you know they exist, and every once in a while you get a spam letter from somebody saying they exist. But I mean, there's really no like one-to-one contact on a daily basis, whereas in this story, the aliens are in your face. They're right yeah. there, and they're interacting. You know, so kind of like story with alien invasion lizard, V from like the 80s.
Yeah, a combination of V, and then there was one called Alien Nation.
Yeah, that was good.
You know, there's the more I looked, the more I wrote this, the more different movies and books I realized were in my brain back whenever. There's been a lot of them, actually. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, V, you know, Independence Day, a lot of those.
Yeah, they were like really instrumental back in the day and formed a lot of sci-fi and what came after. Especially those red suits in V. I don't know. There was something about shoulder pads in the 80s.
They were into shoulder pads.
I'm glad there are no, you know, like rampant shoulder pads in Resistance Day. So we had the, you know, the second book where they start, you know, where they start going to town and like actively resisting the aliens. And then we get the third book, which is Victory Day. Very iconic cover. Once again, these covers just rock on all cylinders.
I love the covers so much.
I got
the first two paperbacks already.
You know, but, you know, we see some of the armor. Obviously, they're taking some of the tech. I haven't read book three yet. I assume that's dust in the background.
Yeah, that's how I wrote the brief. But, you know, a lot of times with book covers, they're not going to be exactly the story, even though I draw inspiration from them. So, you know, you can read the story and decide which character you think that is.
Right on. Oh, yeah, that could be Laura, too.
It could be. Laura is not blonde, but. There's some things in book two and book three, maybe some bodyguard, body double, switcheroo, let's try to trick the alien things going on. Ooh. That happened too. So you got to take your pick. Yeah. I love that book cover. That might be my favorite of all three.
Yeah, that rocks. And then you got, you know, like I said, you got the planes in the background. It almost gives you the vibe that, you know, people have walked up to the fence and saying, "We're coming in," and here's David walking out going, "No, you're not.
Not today, alien invaders." One of the things I like the most that I'm working on right now in book three is because I have all the different people that have risen to the resistance in their own weird kind of quirky ways and how unorganized it is and stuff. But I've decided that a portion of like trick pilots and people who do like military air shows and stuff have become a big part of it. So there's this group of Blue Angels and like one odd Thunderbird and a bunch of like actual combat pilots that have formed a group called Satan's Call Girls. And they have some ship, they have, you know, they're everything from Spitfires, you know, to F-18s, to what they may have stolen from the aliens. And they're just another motley crew.
Oh, that's brilliant. God, I can't remember the name of the trick pilots from Canada. They do tricks in a C-130.
Oh, nice.
there's a big duck painted on the side of the plane. I got to
look that up and work that in.
Oh my God, I can't. That's brilliant. But yeah, this cover screams. This is really, really nice. And obviously, hopefully there's a win involved, hence the cover, or hopefully it's not a win for the aliens. That would suck.
Yeah, somebody's winning. We don't know who. You know, and victory can mean a lot of different things to different people. I mean, especially when you get on a character level, like, for example, some of the struggles that Laura and David and Charles are dealing with individually, what would be victory for them, you know, or what would be victory for the forces opposing them in their own personal struggles? And because, you know, like, for example, Charles has a family in the beginning of this. And so they're kind of like de facto hostages from the very beginning. And that's really inconvenient for everybody involved, and we'll have to see. And then, and his wife and daughters, they have a little bit of their own story thread too. They don't get nearly as much airtime, but they have some interesting things going on.
The good thing, I think, with Charles' point of view in the beginning is that you get to see where the government kind of is in all this.
Yeah.
Because he's a little closer to it because of the, his involvement in Warfighter Games. And the government seems almost like they're acting like a kid who wasn't given enough supervision and discipline.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right. We get it. You know, your roof, your rules, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. let's try this military strike right here. Okay. We were just, you know, we're just fine. We won't do that again. It's good.
There's a scene where they think, you know, they take all their best laid plans and you can see where it's not going well. And you can see which one of them are like, maybe I'll just slip out the back door. Well, this is anyway, kind of like that NFL game you go to where, you know, the victory is assumed and half the stadium's like, yeah, I think we got better places to be right now.
And they leave and then it all goes weird.
Yeah. And then it gets weird.
But yeah. So what, now we have book three that's out. Mm-hmm. What's up for book four? Can we expect that soon?
I'm hoping to get book four done and out in November is my goal. I might have some other projects. So my time, but I'm going to keep them pretty close. I've done them basically every 2 months. So I'm pretty sure we'll have book four out. Book four is called Departure Day.
Ooh.
I have a pretty neat cover for that one too. And then depending on how that is accepted by the reading public, it could possibly be book five. So now we're transitioning from an alien invasion genre to more of a military sci-fi or space opera, where they're basically taking the technology and heading back.
Oh, right on.
To either figure out what went wrong with the aliens or make sure the aliens don't do anything again, depending on the choices the characters make. That outline's still in progress, so it could go either way. And they may decide they don't even want to go back to the Foscos home planet. And they may decide that place is you know,
just a die,
and they're going to go where they were going and try to beat them there.
Ooh.
And get that for themselves. So that could also be an interesting way it could go.
Oh, that's tight. That's really tight. For people who really enjoy this, you have
actually just thought of that one. So thanks for doing this interview, because you might have figured out where the series is going.
Oh my God, that's great. You know, just don't send money, send coffee. It's fine. Right. Exactly. But like for people who really enjoy this series, you have a couple of other series. And I kind of discovered you through the Dark Landing series,
yeah,
which is kind of like Deadwood in space. Oh, yeah. Really, really good. I love Pig Talk. you have the Dark Landing series, which was a series of short stories that eventually was kind of collected. And then you have the Reaper series, like in those epic covers behind you. Yeah. Reaper series was tight. That was very, very tight.
That was a great experience, and it got really well warm welcome from the fans. And you know, that was a good one. I like that a lot. I love, and those characters are good.
I'm on book six in Reapers.
Oh yeah. Right,
of the 10 books.
Oh, you're going to like some of the upgrades that start happening for them, because they have to up their game to deal with their problems.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So, Reaper was really good. I got to tell you, and cause I'm also a huge fan of your, Shortyverse series, sure, which is like mechs on a like a battle planet, and man, you write a really good AI.
I like AIs and side characters and things like that, but yeah, Shorty is something special, and you know, it's definitely there's definitely more Shorty coming. I just got to get to it.
When I subscribed to your newsletter, it was like, hey, you know, you've read this and we appreciate you coming out, but here's a free audiobook for Shorty, and we hope you enjoy. And I'm like, really? What is this audio thing you speak of?
Yeah.
And just the narrator, his like the timbre of his voice and the way that he portrays Shorty and the AI. And it's like he's yelling at the AI to, you know, get something done, and he's like, well, sir, if you had, you know, if you had paid for those upgrades instead of paid for the three nights of felonious behavior with those women, we wouldn't be in this mess. Right. And it's like, yes, that's awesome.
If you didn't choose carousing over that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Is that still a thing? If people sign up for your newsletter, do they get access to the audio for that?
Absolutely. So the first, I wrote four Shorty novellas kind of, and they're not quite big enough to make a good audiobook for sale, but I thought, you know what? It would be something really special, because I had them produced, and I thought I'm going to give these away to people who sign up to my newsletter. So there's four of them. They're about a little over an hour, hour and a half, I think per episode. And, I didn't narrate them. I had a professional do it. So you sign up and you get all four of those.
Oh, that's dope. Yeah. The first one was just fantastic. You know, because you normally, you know, you get like mech warrior type stuff, and it's like, you know, once again, it's mostly military stuff, and you know, or like if you're talking to the actual BattleTech universe, you know, it's these big military houses that are vying for contracts against each other, like very mercenary like and there's this, instead, Shorty's just this guy who kind of just games the system all the time, and it's freaking hysterical.
Yeah, Shorty's one of those guys who was really talented. He was in the military and was good, but he just didn't really play well in a structured environment. So he kind of is off on his own, doing a little work for hire, knows everybody in the military. They all know him. They have different opinions on whether he's a complete idiot.
They
mock him because basically – his mech is pretty small, but he kind of works it for everything it's got, you know. puts it through the ringer.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I think the covers that you put together too were evocative, because you could almost picture that the mech that you use in those covers as the shorty mech itself. And and it's fun. It's just funny because the characters that you write in a lot of your stories, you can see that you either have been through some of this, or you know some of these people, because in some of the characters that you write, that a lot of times they're their own worst problem.
Oh, all the time. That's the way it goes, right? I can extrapolate a lot from some of the people I've bounced into in my years.
And it's really funny, because you know, you read something like Shorty and you're like, hey, I would screw up just like that.
Yeah, it's totally plausible. I can see that app actually happen. That's how my luck would go. 100%.
Yep. So right now we have the They Came for Blood series. Mm-hmm. What else are you working on?
So I have a 3-book series I'm working on for Aethon. It's a very long and interesting story behind that series, but they decided that they liked the first book enough. They said, we think this is a trilogy, and we want you to complete all 3 books so that the fans don't have to wait for them when they're done. So that should be launching pretty soon.
Awesome.
That one I'm very excited about. I'm also nervous because I put a lot into it, took some creative risks and whatnot. So that'll be Brothers in Arms is the name of that series. Chris by Aethon.
Yeah, you had talked about this in the past, and I'm super stoked to see this come out.
This one has a very interesting story about how it came to be and how it got rewritten a couple of times. And so I'm not sure how much of that I'll talk about in front of everybody, because it's kind of boring and just kind of weird. But the end result is that it's been developmentally edited several times and I've rewritten it a couple times and added and expanded, and I'm really proud of it. So that'll hopefully we'll see the first book, and it'll be, I believe we're going to call it First Strike, Brothers in Arms Book 1, should launch in September. And then I believe they're going to do, because Steve and Rhett, they make all these decisions because they know what they're doing, and I don't. So they're probably going to do, I think they're going to be one a month. But they'll be done when we start. So those will be very reliable. Those will come out. I'm working on, of course, the rest of the Invasion series. I have a big project planned with Jay and Chaney that we've been developing for 4 or 5 months now that we're both excited about. And I have Shorty. I have a whole series of Shorty outline that I need to write. I got some even better book covers for that.
I can't wait.
Done by this artist I found on ArtStation. He did a great job, and I hope he still wants to do the rest of the series, because I made the first cover, but then since it's been delayed in the launch of that series, I'm like, well, I can't buy 5 book covers right now because they're not cheap,
right?
And then I just have a list of projects that I have a series that I started a long time ago, which I think might be my force de majeure.
Nice.
And it is called Blue Sun Armada. And it has a neat twist and some just totally badass characters. And then it's interesting, and I'm nervous about how well that'll be accepted, because the two main characters are actually married.
Ooh.
And they may or may not be human, that are very far from home, and they're going to go on a journey with their whole household. And so it's a little bit like, has a little more of the kind of Dune type of feels, the way it's politically structured and the characters, but there's also some sci-fi twists, but then the characters are a little bit more the way I write characters than when you read Dune. So they're going to be a little bit mouthier and snarky and
not so regal.
And all of that to just cover their very deeply laden personal problems and their horrific, you know, life decisions they've made as a group, you know? So I'm right really on. Excited about that. That one could get out of control. That might be something that takes me years to complete and is really big. So I'm going to probably going to have to write a few of those before I start throwing those out next year sometime, hopefully.
Right on. So more like the 400 page paperback than like,
say, and the individual books. I usually like my stories to be about 80 to 90,000, just because I don't want to write words just for the sake of words, but it could be a big complex story universe. We'll see. I'm excited. I really want to get into that, because I've written the first part of it and they have some outlines for most of the books. So I have detailed outlines of the first book and a little bit less detailed outline for the second, a little bit less for the third, all the way out to like book eight. And I have the first five book covers purchased.
Ooh, nice.
Through a series of, I have to have these from Tom Edwards right now. Weak moments, because I do have a weakness for book covers.
We hadn't noticed because they're all so beautiful. Plus, like,
I must have it. I'm going to write a book about that. What's the book, what story about? I don't know, but this book cover is awesome, and I know there's a story in it.
And we have the 10 Reaper covers behind you, which are just glorious. If you if you're out there and you haven't seen these covers, the Reaper covers are really, really tight.
Yeah.
The if people want to stalk you on the internet, what's the best place for them to chase you?
So my website is really easy. It's scottmoonwriter.com.
And they can get the newsletter from there?
And you can find the newsletter there. It's also in any of my books. You can get most of them on, well, you can get all the Invasion books on KU, and the links are in there. If you have any problem getting it, you can always contact me over, like, I have a Facebook page, The Moon Base, and I also spend even more time on Keystroke Media.
Right on.
Noel, where we do a lot of talking and shenanigans and memes, you know, important stuff.
Especially when Chuck's interface breaks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Original Chuck memes are the best. They're tight. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for coming out and sharing a little bit of the afternoon with us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun. And I got some great ideas for the rest of the
season. Did you write them down?
I better write. I'll do that as soon as
we click off. Luckily, this is recorded. So. We'll be able to, you can always rewind and get what you need done. We want to thank everybody for coming out and shooting a little bit of time with us. And we'll catch you next time on the BAMP podcast. And awkward silence.